Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee for June 13th. And we have two bills to take up today. And Senator Boqvist was here a moment ago, and I do not see him. And there he is again, Senator Boqvist. So I'll open a public hearing and work session on HJR 7B. And Senator Boqvist, if you'd like to come forward. And Erin, did you need to tell us anything new? I know we were waiting for a technical.
Let me just briefly talk about the amendment we have. We have the Dash B5 amendment, and it provides the governor's authority to redirect general fund appropriations and lottery allocations continues only until operation terminates 30 days after governor declares disaster, unless the legislature extends the period or until the Legislative Assembly passes law that specifies how those monies are to be used, whichever occurs sooner. We did receive a fiscal statement on the Dash B5, and there's a no revenue impact statement on the Dash B5.
Great. Thanks a lot, Erin. And good afternoon, Senator Boqvist. Good to see you.
Madam Chair, Senator Brian Boqvist, Chairman of the Veterans and Military Affairs Committee, and the former co-chairman of the Joint Emergency Preparedness Committee from the 2005 session. You have HGR 7 before you. I actually think it's originally sponsored by Representative Cowan, came through, or actually House Interim Committee on Veterans and Emergency Services. In a nutshell, what this is for four sessions, we've been trying to put together a continuation plan for the legislature and what happens if there's a catastrophic event in the state of Oregon. You should have before you that they're passing out, just to give you an idea, because the Cascadia earthquake model is about the most common thing. I believe all of you several weeks ago got a copy of Dr. McConnell's from Dagami's power slides on what happened in Japan and what it would look like here in the state of Oregon. We held hearings in our own committee on this with presiding officer present. I would point out that you got copies of the ODOT slides, which tell you when the earth shakes for about 2 minutes in the Willamette Valley, you're not driving anywhere for several weeks. Most of our bridges are in a planning process of being earthquake proof, and I believe, if I recall the date correctly, on 2221 we will reach that goal. Dr. McConnell and the scientists at Oregon State tell us that we're likelihood of having a 9-0 is somewhere in the next 40 years since 2005 has changed and kind of put down. You have a little piece of paper that I did bring down for you that's in front of you. It's color. Hopefully you got a color copy and the rest are black and white. That's the USGS report as of about 35-40 minutes ago that shows you the number of earthquakes in the United States in the last 7 days. If an earthquake happens here, we need to have a continuation plan. Presently, if the earthquake happens and it shakes, this building is going to fall to the ground and we cannot constitutionally meet, because the Constitution, which came from Iowa, Indiana, and Massachusetts, says we got to meet in this building right here. No place else, not across the street, not on the opposite corner, right here. So we've put together a plan. It went through the House. This plan has been in process for 4 years. Everybody that wanted an amendment or a technical fix, we put into the plan so that we have it. And I will invite my dear colleague, Representative Cowan, to come up here because we've been working on this for four sessions together. The plan you've read is very simple. The ground shakes. Everybody realizes there's an earthquake. The governor declares an emergency. When he declares an emergency, we automatically come into session. And as I mentioned, there won't be any bridges left. And so it'll probably take about 7 days for everybody to get here. And then we kind of go on from then. The plan does give the governor the authority to respond to life and limb. I think everybody here has been in special sessions over the budget. So you know what happens when you can't balance the budget or we have to cut. You have the same problem when you have an earthquake. You can't move money from pot A to point B to go save life or limb. The alternative, as I pointed out to my colleagues in my party in the opposite chamber when there were discussions about 4 weeks ago, is you have two alternatives. Pass HGR 7 to the voters and get them to pass, or the governor will have to declare martial law and suspend the Constitution. That's the only two options we have. And for those of us in the legislative process who have a historical perspective, would rather have a plan in place and know what's going to happen and know that we're coming here to get things going and to assist. And with that, I will turn it over to my good colleague from the House.
Thank you, Senator.
Great. Welcome, Representative Cowan, to the Senate Rules Committee. Good to see you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
For the record, I am Jean Kellen. I represent House District 10. I really don't need to reiterate everything that's been said here, and I apologize. I'm trying to be in two places at the same time at this particular moment. But I think that there's a couple of things in terms of the conversation that I've heard that and the concerns that have been raised. First of all, there's no intention to step into the middle of the initial disaster response that's necessary. We have a command structure in place that would stay in place, but when you get beyond those initial phases and you've got recovery facing you, we really do need to have the flexibility to be able to bring the legislative body into that process. And it sort of amazes me that we keep getting sideways in these conversations and worrying about potential details when we're talking about catastrophic disaster. And it's very clearly stated that these are hopefully events that none of us will ever see. Let me read the list. Act of terrorism, earthquake, flood, public health emergency, tsunami, volcanic eruption, war. I sincerely hope that we never face the need to implement these measures. But the fact that we have no procedure in place and that we've talked about it for so long without being able to move anything forward, it just doesn't make sense to me, and it seemed like it was time to bring it back once again for people to take a serious, thoughtful look at the situation.
And Madam Chair and Committee Members, I would add that because the fiscal, the way it's written, it would be the November 12 ballot, because that's when you get to put everything on in the presidential election, and it doesn't cost much money.
Right. I think, in fact, though this had a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, it's been clarified that it doesn't need to go there.
Correct. And Madam Chair, just in follow-up to that, I honestly think that the voters have no idea that we are as ill-prepared as we are to do the necessary response should there be the kind of event that they would expect us to be responsibly addressing.
Okay, any questions for these legislators?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Ferriello.
I wonder if either of these public servants can describe the white swan effect, if you've ever heard of that. Or the black swan effect. That's what I was after, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Senator Farrelly, I'd be happy to be educated.
Does this have to do with ballet, by
Well, no, Madam Chair. The thing about the earthquake and tsunami in Japan is that is the same sort of phenomenon that you encounter when you try to imagine something that's almost unimaginable and plan for a thing like that. So most of us could draw or describe what a white swan looks like because we've seen one. But almost nobody's ever seen a black swan, so the problem is that your imagination, your planning skill, your ability to sort of scenario and engineering of what might happen fails because you don't understand the parameters of how big a disaster can be. A nine, it's one of those things. I'm not very well facilitated. I don't have much of a facility with math, but the boxes on the right hand side of the map that we were given as a handout show the exponential differences between a 3, a 4, a 5, and a 9 earthquake. It's not a logical progression. It's exponential. It's a multiplier of 1,000 times every time you change an order of magnitude on the Richter scale. So, literally, it would be impossible to imagine what a 5 Richter scale earthquake would be as opposed to what a 6 might be. It's 1,000 orders of magnitude different. Planning for a disaster like that, we haven't been through one. The evidence, the geological evidence on the coast shows us what a subduction earthquake could do. We know we're way overdue. Somebody told me that that we're about 40 years overdue for the one that's supposed to relieve the tension on the tectonic plates that are off the shore in Oregon. And I noticed from this map, if you look at the clusters of earthquakes, there aren't any in Oregon or off the coast. That should worry everybody. When I asked about that previously, well, I'll defer to the panel, Madam Chair.
And Madam Chair, Senator Farrelly, The bad news is we aren't on the map. That's the bad news. According to the scientists at Oregon State and the DGAMI and everybody else, is that when you're relieving tension, you're on the map with little teeny tremors. The fact that there aren't many along the coast indicates that there's a large buildup. I would point out that in Japan, we're at just over 50,000 casualties right now. They are about, and I may mention earlier, we're about 22, 21 before we're prepared. And if you put us in the Japanese model, they're at about 22, 10, about 11 years out from being prepared. They're the most prepared nation for earthquakes. You see what happened there. And here, it's not just the coast that happens here. The real damage is going to be right here in the Willamette Valley, all the way up and down, when you shake for 2 minutes.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Callahan.
If I could follow on that. Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Farioli. I think that, to me, really magnifies the need for us to have a mechanism in place to find a way to address whatever it is that might befall. There isn't any way that we can predict exactly what's going to happen. There is no way that we can predict what the ramifications will be, what the losses will be. But for us to sit here unprepared under our Constitution to bring whatever membership of the legislative body is able to be located into some sort of a gathering so that as many people as possible can be responsible for trying to figure out a way to deal with the aftermath, that to me is irresponsible for us to not address that there is a possibility that something bad could befall this state. And we don't have to focus on just an earthquake or whether or not there's a subsequent tsunami. I mean, even a major catastrophic public health emergency could debilitate enough people that we should have a mechanism for some number of this body to be able to come and be part of the solution.
Right. Well, I know you've both been working very hard on this, not just this session, but for a long time. So I think we obviously don't refer constitutional revisions very often around here, but clearly I think recent events have highlighted the need for this one, and I think with the amendment, which has cleared up some ambiguities, I think we're in good shape here. So I want to really thank you both for bringing it to us.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. We have one more person signed up to testify, and that is General Mike Caldwell, if you'd like to come forward. I know you were here the other day to talk about this too, and we weren't able to get to it then, so thank you for coming back.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director of the Military Department. I'm the Interim Director of the Office of Emergency Management. There's really nothing I could add to what the other two very learned representatives indicated to you. We support this this legislation. I think in simple terms, it gets the legislature back in the game, whereas right now you're really not if something happened catastrophically and you couldn't get here. So I think that's the good news, is you're back in the game at the appropriate time and the appropriate place. So we support the legislation and would recommend that you move it along so the voters get that opportunity to do the same.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony and for your work on this. Any questions? Okay, thanks again. Okay, members, we have legislative counsel in the room, but I think that is just in case there was any question about the Dash B5 amendment, which I think is pretty clear. So, members, we are in a work session, and we have a Dash B5 amendment. Senator Farioli?
Madam Chair, I move we adopt the Dash B5 amendment to HJR 7.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved the Dash B5 amendment to HJR 7. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any objection? Seeing none, amendment is adopted. Senator Farioli?
Madam Chair, I move HJR 7 to the floor as amended with the recommendation that the measure be adopted and that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved HJR 7 as amended to the floor with a due adopt recommendation and that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion on that motion?
Madam Chair?
Senator Farioli.
So much of what could happen in a disaster would be utterly beyond our control. But the citizens of Oregon would expect us to administratively respond. And what this HJR 7 as amended does is prevents the legislative collapse and the administrative collapse that would follow a disaster. So, if there is a duty that's incumbent on us, it would be to make sure that the capacity for those that may come after us, or those that may fill our respective roles, are able to act in an emergency.
Thank you for your comment, Senator Farioli. Further discussion? Seeing none, we're on a motion. Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the motion carries. And this will move to the floor, and we will ask Senator Boquist if he would like to carry this, and he's indicated aye. I guess that was not the appropriate phrase for somebody from the Air Force. So, okay. Thanks a lot, and I'll close the work session on HJR 7. And I will open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 860. And Erin, if you'd like to tell us where we're at with this, that would be great.
I will actually reference you to the amendment. The Dash 4 amendment actually replaces the measure. The measure, the amendment requires health benefit insurers that cover prescription eye drops for glaucoma also cover one early refill of that prescription if the refill is requested within 30 days of the date the original or previous refill was dispensed. And then also specifies time period for health insurer to request a refund of paid claim and specifies time period for health care provider to request additional payment and to resubmit the claim denied by or refunded to a different insurer. We did receive a minimal fiscal impact and a no revenue impact on the Dash 4 amendment.
Okay, thank you. Erin, we've got several people signed up to testify on two different pieces of this. So I think we'll call Brian Beringer and Elise Brown and Rose Cox, if the three of you would like to come up together. Just briefly tell us what you have to tell us. Whoever wants to go first, just please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brian Beringer, and I'm with the Oregon Medical Association. And thank you for allowing us to come and testify on this bill today. We specifically want to address Section 4 of the Dash 4 amendments and let you know that what we are bringing forward to you in that section is a consensus agreement between AHIP, OMA, and the ASCs. Section of the amendment has to do with the concepts around overpayment recovery. And this was a bill that we passed last session that was fiercely negotiated between the insurers and the OMA to create overpayment recovery timelines for insurers to come in and seek overpayment to physicians and for physicians to also seek underpayment from insurers. And in passing that bill last session, we inadvertently left a small hole for a problem to occur, and that was with a little issue called timely filing. And to give you an example of what happens in this situation, is let's say a patient comes into a physician's office and they hand the card to the clinic and the card says Regents, but they just went through a marital change or their employer just changed insurers and it's actually Aetna at that point in time. So we bill Regents and then Regents finds out that they're not actually the payer on that, so they come back to us and ask for that overpayment. And then at that point in time, sometimes the clock has run for us to be able to submit a timely filing claim to that second insurer. So what we had intended to do was to create a new timeline and to fix that problem. And that then opened up negotiations for a new set of timelines. This bill was originally in, 231, and then it was 573. 573 passed over from the Senate. We had an opportunity on the House to really work on these timelines and renegotiate these timelines to get everybody on board. And, in fact, the timelines now in this agreement actually reflect the minority report from 573. And so we are here today to ask that you include this amendment into the Senate Bill 860.
Hey, thank you. Please go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rose Cox. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Ambulatory Surgery Center Association. We are fully in support of this bill and appreciate everyone working together on it and appreciate this committee for hearing it, being able to find a vehicle where all of our language will fit into, and we think this is going to be a great compromise.
Thanks.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Elise Brown representing AHIP, and that is America's Health Insurance Plans, the National Trade Association of Health Insurance Carriers across the country. And our Oregon members have all had an opportunity to review the language. The fact that this is, that mirrors the 573 minority report brought us on board. So just wanted, I'm here to reinforce that, and we're ready to support this bill. Thank you.
Great. Thanks a lot. Any questions for these folks? Okay. Thank you all for being here. And now I will call Nan Heim and Bill Cross to talk about the other provision in this amendment. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee. Whoever
Thank
wants
you.
To go first, please
Thank
go
you.
Ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Nan Heim, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Academy of Ophthalmology. Our members are medical doctors specializing in eye care. And we're here today to support the replacement amendment, the provision that addresses prescription glaucoma eye drops. And the reason that we're here with this bill, this bill has actually already passed the House on June 1st by a vote of 59-1. But unfortunately, that is too late for the process, for that bill to be heard in the Senate. The reason that the bill is late is that the problem it addresses is something that we heard about quite some time after session began. We heard about it from our national association, and we wanted to survey our members and make sure that it actually is a problem for glaucoma patients here in Oregon. The issue is that some insurers had begun denying early refills of prescription eye drops for glaucoma. And as you know, if you've ever used eye drops of any kind, it's easy to spill a few. And so if your 30-day prescription, for example, runs out in, say, 27 days, the patient might decide to skip the last 3 days when he or she discovers that insurance won't cover the refill. And skipping 3 days of a glaucoma eye drop can have very dire consequences for that patient's vision. We worked with the optometric physicians in support of this bill, and we also supported an amendment that was proposed by John Powell for Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield. And we think that this bill will actually help some people not lose their vision. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Please go ahead.
Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Bill Cross. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Optometric Physicians Association. I just want to echo the comments that Nan Heim has made and wanted you to witness Nan and I actually holding hands, asking you on behalf of the Academy and the optometric physicians for some good legislation. We appreciate your support.
Great. Thanks a lot. We're glad to see you in agreement and such good friends. Okay, any questions for these folks? Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, members, that completes our sign-up sheet, and we are in a work session, and we do have an amendment. Senator Ferrioli?
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -4 amendments to Senate Bill 860.
Senator Ferrioli has moved the -4 amendments to Senate Bill 860. Any discussion on the amendment? Any objection? Seeing none, amendment is adopted. Senator
Madam
Ferrioli?
Chair, I move Senate Bill 860 to the floor do pass recommendation as amended.
Senator Ferrioli has moved Senate Bill 860 as amended by the -4 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Senator Ferrioli.
I know I do not speak for all the members of this committee, but I never tire of the story of how the minority report was actually the right policy for this state.
Great comment. Okay, any further discussion? Okay, any objection to the motion? Seeing none, it's adopted. And we have a volunteer to carry this on the floor. Okay, I will carry it on the floor. Okay, thanks a lot. That completes our work for today. That's the work session on Senate Bill 860, and we are adjourned. Okay.